Hey everyone, it's Mary Lou Tyler. Today I have David Hotfeld. He is, you're going to love this podcast because he is all about the science of selling. In fact, he has a book on Amazon.com called The Science of Selling, Proven Strategies to Make Your Pitch, Influence Decisions, and Close the Deal. So David actually goes soup to nuts. He's the CEO and chief sales trainer of the Hotfeld Group. And we are delighted to have him on our show today because we love science and we love research and we love data. As we march down that pipeline to close, the more information we have to connect those dots, the better we're going to be and the more strategic and more we can scale, as well as more consistency in the selling process. So welcome, David, to the show.
Well, thank you, Mary and Lou. It's great to be with you today.
So tell us about the book. What I like to do with our audience, and I'm sure you know they are very receptive to understanding the why behind it. Like, you know, writing a book is not easy, as you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what motivated you to do that? And what are the two or three things that you think were just transforming the people that come through your organization from a trainer's perspective when you started introducing these concepts to your students?
Yeah, so the book was about 10 years in the works, about 10 years of research. So I have a very odd hobby, and that is a little over 10 years ago, I began to read, voraciously read, academic journals in a number of different scientific disciplines like social psychology, communication theory, cognitive psychology, social neuroscience, just to name a few. And I would try to translate this science of how we're influenced. How does our brain create choices? How do we create preferences? Why do we choose one product or service over another? And I saw this data that had so much rich information. And I said, boy, I think this is so relevant for what I do as a sales professional every day. And so I became obsessed with it. And just over the years, I started just translating it. And I saw such a noticeable impact on my performance as a salesperson. And then also for the sales team that I was leading at the time as well. And in fact, we went to on the Inc. 5000 list, one of the fastest growing companies in the United States. And I mean, just sales went up by over 400%.
Wow.
And it was just astounding. And I saw the difference that these insights made. It allowed us to really serve our potential customers more effectively by really understanding how their brains make choices and aligning how we present with that. So the book is really the outpouring of that. Mm-hmm. And I just think there's so much information that oftentimes in the world of sales, we don't have access to for good reason. It's been hidden away in these academic journals, and academics really, for the most part, with a few exceptions, haven't cared about sales at all. And so I thought, boy, you know, more people need to know about this. And I thought, well, you know, I have a passion for it. I might as well try to write a book on it. And we were lucky enough to get Penguin Random House to be interested in the book. They kind of saw the vision and kind of helped us. And of course, published the book just in November of 2016, rather. Just a
yeah,
few
it's
months
very
ago.
Young, right?
Very young, yeah. Just hit 6 months yesterday. And so it's been very well received, and it's so exciting because there's so many powerful, proven insights from behavioral science that once salespeople learn them, it can make such a difference. So the second part of your question was, what impact has it had? What one or two things? I guess two things real quickly I'll share. Number one is one of the big breakthroughs in the book. There's a couple. One of the biggest ones is how much commitments matter in selling. And that idea is nothing new. We've always known commitments matter in selling, but how do we get those commitments and what are they? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we talk about commitments and then we go back to business as usual and think about, you know, that one at the end of the sale when the people say, buyers say yes or no. But what the research shows is our brains construct the buying decision through a series of incremental commitments that guide our potential customers on a progression of consent and naturally advance the sale. And so in about a 6.5 year research study applying this science and also doing some testing on my own, we were able to identify what are these commitments and how do I get them? We call it choice architecture in behavioral economics. How do I architect this choice? Because choices are made contextually. What happens before the choice heavily influences how our buyers perceive a commitment or a choice. And so how do we do that? The second thing that came out of the research that's really impactful was something called heuristics. And this is a very common term in behavioral economics. And heuristics are mental shortcuts our brains make when we form choices. And there's so many examples of these and how they can make such a powerful impact because it allows us to present our products and services and companies in ways that our brains create preferences. And this can make just a huge impact. Little things can make a huge impact on our sales production and results.
You know, this is incredibly interesting because my brain immediately went to the top of funnel, which is where I live, I love, and I know you take everything all the way to close. So you hit every step. But at top of funnel, when we are trying to start conversation with people we don't know or follow up on a conversation with people who might have engaged but not really committing. And I drill into my people that everything we do, when any type of sales message, whether it's email, whether it's a postcard, whether it's a voicemail, whether it's a conversation, there has to be something called a call to action, a step that we want them, something we want them to do in order to be able to get them to commit. So my question to you on top of funnel is, or let me just make it even more broad. Can you describe the types of commitments that we need to have our prospects make at various stages in the pipeline? Or is it driven more by the questions that you ask and the answers that you get that'll direct you as to how you should get what commitments you should get and where you should place those commitments?
That's an excellent question. And this is one of the really things that surprised me. A number of things surprised me as I conducted all this, you know, analyzing all this data and research over the last decade. One of them was commitments. I thought I understood commitments. I had been a top sales performer and I had certainly been I thought a great closer in my previous life. And that's kind of how I labeled myself. What I found was I was wrong in a couple areas. One of them was how our brains make commitments. What the research conclusively shows is that for us to form a buying decision, there are certain commitments that must be made. And what's really fascinating is it doesn't really change that much on the type of sale. And this really surprised me because I thought depending on the type of sale, the core commitments would be different. Now, certainly the execution is different. No doubt about it. The way we obtain them, absolutely. For a complex sale, we have some clients that their sales cycles are, 1 to 2 years. And right. So for them, it's different than someone selling a product that with a much faster sales cycle with less of complexity in the sales process. However, because this is based on how our brains form choices, it's based on the brain, not the type of sale. So we always start with that buyer-centric approach is how does the brain form a choice? And there's 6 commitments we found that make all the difference in the world. In fact, if one of these commitments is not made, the sale never happens. If all of them are made and some other conditions are met, the sale is very likely to occur, providing you're talking to someone that has the authority and the means to make that choice or multiple buyers. And so we call these the 6 whys. These are 6 commitments that each begin with the word why. And we say this is how you should structure a sales process. And there's so many implications from this because we can now go and look at any sales process and we can instantly see bottlenecks. We can see, well, where is one of these commitments not being addressed? And if that happens, now the buyer has to make that commitment on their own. Sometimes they will, sometimes they may not. But if we can guide them through their mental buying process, we're so much more effective because, as you rightly pointed out just a few moments ago, we're making it easy for them to engage with us. They know what the next step is. We're guiding them through that process. And what we found is when salespeople align how they sell with how the brain creates a buying decision, they're instantly more effective.
Wow. This is now the other question I have is because I am a process expert, is can we systematize the 6 whys? For example, a top of funnel, we're typically given a lot of records because we're targeting ideal accounts that we're going to hopefully start a conversation with. So we may have thousands of records that we're dealing with. We need to cut through the clutter to get to the people who we think are going to actually engage with us. So we have to entice them, persuade them, whatever it is we need to do to have them bubble up to the top. So can this 6Y approach be embedded in our sales message and into a sequence so that those people who get it will respond? Or is this something that you think is more of after you've started the conversation, this is when the 6Ys actually start?
That's an excellent question. And I guess, yeah, there's a number of answers. The answer real simply is a yes to both scenarios. So what's really interesting is when I had, as we developed the 6Ys over the 6.5 year period of doing this research, we were focusing primarily on, you know, in the sale. But what happened since the books came out is really interesting. And this is pretty young information, but we've had marketers read the book and say, wow, these 6Ys are extremely applicable to what we do. And so they've begun to use it. And what we found, and this is very early data, but it's really exciting. We've been talking about sales and marketing alignment for decades. And certainly the lines are blurring in sales and marketing. Sales is doing marketing. Marketing is doing sales. But what we found is the 6Ys give a point of collaboration because now there's a common messaging. Because in most organizations, sales and marketing, there's almost like a wall between them. And best case scenario, marketing throws something over the wall, some information once in a while, and sales will throw something back. And most of the time, that's what it looks like. But with the 6Ys, we've had a few organizations that have embraced this from a sales and marketing perspective. And now they have this common language. So they go, well, this marketing message, we're going to target this Y. And then the salespeople, they're speaking the same language. Right. Which really doesn't happen in most organizations. It's one speaking French, one speaking German, and the communication is clumsy at best. But with this common language, it's been very interesting. I don't have a lot of data on this, but it's something that has sparked my interest because I've just recently, in the last few months, found out some organizations are utilizing this approach. And the early results have been extremely promising because now for the first time in the organization's history is what they've conveyed, sales and marketing are collaborating because they have this common language. And so it's really driving some interesting outcomes thus far. So it's very exciting. So I know how the sales-wise impact within the sale, as you engage, you identified a potential customer, you've qualified them, and now you're putting them through that funnel. Right. I had that down, but what I hadn't really thought about was how it can really impact prior to how the impact marketing and how that can then impact sales. And so it's very young yet, but it seems very, very promising. It could be a pretty significant breakthrough if things continue as it looks like they are.
And, you know, because we're at top of funnel and the listeners on this podcast are brave souls who are ready to test, because we all know testing is really important. And we have a statistical relevance in the number of records that we can test this type of scenario with. And, you know, this is something that I love because is systematic. I'm hearing a method here. I'm hearing a system. And I teach the 5 levels of awareness, which is borrowed from Eugene Schwartz. Back in the 60s, they used to do that. And it is trying to uncover where a buyer is in his purchase intent, just to be able to understand of those 100 people we send emails to, you know, which 3 or 4 are going to be the ones that are ready to engage. So we're all about putting records through a statistically relevant sample and testing this. And we can easily, for those of you listening, we can easily implement a track that has the 6Ys embedded in it, since we do an 8 to 10 touch sequence in most of our pre-sales conversation, top of funnel outreach. So yeah, this immediately impacted me in terms of saying, we should probably try this top of funnel, pre-sales conversation.
Yeah. And there's also something that I know has interested a lot of marketers and salespeople as well that I mentioned briefly a few minutes ago, which is those heuristics, right. Which are those mental shortcuts. Let me give you an example because it's fresh in my mind because I just had an investment banking firm I was talking to yesterday, and they had said they had used one of the principles in the book, which was a heuristic, and they closed a $4 million deal that was stalled because of it. And so let me share with you that heuristic. This is a quick example.
Share.
It's an interesting one. It's easy to understand, and it's a good representative of what heuristics are. It's called single option aversion. We talk about it, and we talk about many in the book. This is just one of the more simpler ones. And what it says is that our brains assign a higher level of risk when presented with simply one option than when presented with multiple options, because our brains are comparison machines. So how do we know if a price is good or bad for a product or service? We have to compare it to something else, what we paid last time, what we were told it would cost, what a friend of ours paid. And so we're always comparing. It's how we create certainty in our minds. And so, for example, one researcher named Daniel Michon published some research on the single option aversion. He did a number of different experiments. One of the most entertaining one was he went and took DVD players and he showed them to shoppers. And he said, would you buy this DVD player, showing only one option? And when he did that, 10% of them said yes. They examined it, looked at the price, said, yeah, we'll buy it. Michon wanted to know what happens if we add a second DVD player. Do sales go up or down? Now, single option aversion tells you, well, that'll create more certainty, reduce the perception of risk. It should go up. That's exactly what happened. When two DVD players were added, sales went up to 66% of the shoppers chose one. 34% chose the original DVD player. So sales went up by over 200% on that one. And then 32% chose the second one, equal to 66% increase. And so that is representative of how our brains make choices. When we have two options, we'll compare them instinctively. We'll select the winner. And that selection reduces our perception of risk and makes it significantly more likely that we'll say yes. So this investment banking firm, one of the managers read the book who I was talking to, and one of his guys came in. He was trying to sell a $4 million insurance policy to a business, and it would be $400,000 per year for 10 years. So it was $4 million total, and it was stalled. They had showed the policy they recommended, and the business owner said, well, I don't know about this. I'm just going to wait. And okay, so they retreat. Well, he goes in and talks to his manager, and his manager says, well, you know, I was just reading this book, and I think what you're dealing with is a single option aversion. Why don't you go in and show a second option? Just give him another choice. Okay, so what's the harm in that? So he went back, showed him a lesser option, say, I want to give you something else to compare it to. Here's another option to consider. People, oh, okay, yeah, show me. What do you got? And so he showed him a lesser option, a lesser insurance policy. He said, you know, it doesn't have all the coverage, but it's less of a premium. You know, what are your thoughts? And the business owner compared both of them and said, well, no, this one isn't as good as the first. Let's just go with that one. Boom, $4 million sale. It was that easy. Why? Yeah. Because very simply, they had done a lot of things right, but this buyer needed a nudge. He needed to be helped in the decision process. And that is representative of what happens all the time in sales. And these simple little heuristics that science has proven, when we start aligning how we sell with how our brains make choices, it makes us instantly more effective. In that one instance, it generated a $4 million sale when the sale was pretty much dying. So it's just one example.
Yeah, you know, this is, I learned a long time ago from Robert Cialdini, who wrote a book, The Principles of Persuasion. And I had the just the honor of attending a class when he used to teach back in the dark ages. I went to Phoenix and took his class on the principles, the six principles. And he gave a very similar example, although he added a third choice. Now, this is probably for smaller size deals. And inadvertently, people will pick the middle one. So that's another thing, too, is that when faced with three choices, the high, the low, the middle, people will generally gravitate towards the middle. And that's why you guys see on the pricing pages of web pages that, you know, people like this option the most. You're doing social proof and you're also doing the middle of the road option that's safer, quote unquote. So I love that idea, though. I never thought about, even in my sales to clients, of giving them another option, because I typically have one offering and that's it. So I'm going to try that now.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I know even when I talk to clients and when my clients go out and talk, even if you just mentioned a second option, and even if it doesn't even matter if it's a good option, just giving people the ability to compare, because our brains are going to search for a comparison. And the harder it is, the more challenging it is. Sometimes we struggle with that, and then our perception of risk goes up. And so, yeah, just learning some of these simple heuristics are incredibly powerful because they've been proven over decades. I mean, I shared with you one experiment from Daniel Michon. We can literally talk all day about the experiments that have been done in choice. As you well mentioned, you know, having three options, people will choose the middle one more often than not because they'll compare the high one, the low one, and the middle one seems the safest option. Leveraging social proof is another heuristic, right? Social proof for our listeners is the idea that we connect the persuasiveness of an idea with how others are responding to it. My favorite example of social proof is standing ovations. All of us have been in at a performance, and the performance concludes, and we're pleased. We sit down, we're clapping, and all of a sudden, everyone around us starts standing up. And even though we did not want to, and we had no plans to, we find ourselves rising to our feet, also joining in on the applause. And what in the world is happening there, right? As someone that studies social science, I love that because I love to look around and see people that are like, oh, I guess we're doing this. And they stand up and applaud. And it's what force makes us stand up? And it's that social proof. It feels wrong to sit down. Not only that, but if you stay seated, oftentimes people will look at you and say, boy, what a jerk. Or what's wrong with that guy, right? Yeah. Why is that, right? It's this social norm. We expect in a room full of people standing clapping that all of us will stand up. And if you don't, you may pay a price, at least in the esteem of others. And so it's fascinating to learn some of these principles and then say, okay, now how do we apply this in the real world of selling? And sometimes, boy, little shifts can make such a dramatic impact.
And especially, as I said before, the fact that we do systematize at top of funnel some of the pre-sales conversations by using mass personalization, it's a perfect laboratory to test these things without, you know, spending a lot of money on it. It's really focusing on aligning, like you said, the content assets, the sales message, and, you know, before you do your pitch, the pre-sales conversation of just starting the conversation, getting people to raise their finger, you know, raise an eyelash or whatever it is so that we can start that conversation is so important. And I think if there is a process, and it sounds like within the book, there's a methodology to go about doing that, we should all be reading your book, right?
Now I'm standing and applauding. Yes, very well said. Well said. No argument from me on that. I think one of the things I think your listeners will enjoy about the book is that it's very practical. It's not a textbook. It's not going back to school to become an amateur psychologist or anything like that.
Right.
So it really practically shares these insights, but it shows you the how. How do you apply this in the real world? Here's examples. Here's the data. But one thing that's fascinating that a lot of people have commented on is that it also tells you why. Right. And it tells why is that. And so in the book, for example, we have over 400 different citations to academic journals. And so over 1,000 different academic journals are referenced in the book. And so if you want to go in and say, well, I want to learn more about single option aversion or social proof, I want to read the research for myself that's cited in the book, you can do that. You follow the citations and you can go, you can be off. A lot of it you can find online for free. Sometimes there's a small fee to read the journals, depending on which one it is. But you can do that. So it's all evidence-based. It's backed by that. So you can understand. And we found that, especially for very established salespeople that are really high performers, they love it because they say, you know what? I want to know why. If I'm going to make a change, why should I do that? Because I've already been successful. And they're like what I was 10 years ago. Like, I'm skeptical, right? I mean, I'm already been successful. I've got the success thing down in sales, but how do I get to that next level? How do I go from great to exceptional or dominant, right? How do I do that? And so this science gives you some insights. And what I found too is once you learn some of it, you start creating your own strategies. You learn how to adapt more effectively. And I learned, I know, looking back when I was applying this early on, especially, what I found was that when customers, you know, I had to adapt to meet the needs of that specific customer. I was able to do so because I had the science as my guide. I wasn't trying to guess my way to success. Now I was saying, okay, I knew where I was going and I knew how to get there. I knew the science would help me accomplish those goals and really serve my customers. Mm-hmm. And so it really gives us that insight of why, which really illuminates then how it allows you to be more creative and more effectively so.
And it reduces the return on, you know, it just maximizes the return on effort. I mean, that's really what we're all about, is we want to be spending more time having quality and meaningful conversations with our clients and with our prospects. And if we can blend science in with, you know, that has evidence and that this is how we think, this is how we buy, you know, internet irrespective or not. You know, if we can apply some of these techniques, that is going to help us just build a pipeline that's consistent, that if we want to scale it, we can. This sounds like quite a labor of love, your book. Yeah?
Yes. Yeah. It definitely took much longer than I anticipated the research. I wasn't planning on 10 years. I was thinking 2 to 3 is what I thought. And then yeah. I got to the 2-year mark and then I said, well, 2 to 3 more. And then I got to, and it kept coming 2 to 3. But yeah, it became, boy, I got deeper and deeper into it and I saw more insights. And then I'm like, well, I can't stop now. I mean, there's so much data out there. So yeah, it was a ridiculous amount of time and money accumulating all this information. But boy, I mean, it's so rich. And what I love is, you know, we have clients all around the world, but I love hearing from people that are reading the book and saying, you know, I use this and it helped me in this way. And, you know, because you write a book, as you know, Mary Lou, you know, you write a book and you put all this work into it and then you give it out to the marketplace and, you know, you don't see people buying it. You don't see them reading it. I mean, that it happens, but you don't see it visually. And so you don't know how people will respond to it. And so it's great to see, you know, it being well received and all that work. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful to hear some of the success stories early on that the book has really helped people. And I think that's the exciting thing, as you're talking about, really being data driven and evidence based and incorporating mm-hmm. some of these science backed principles. It gives us more tools. It allows us to get greater insight into our buyers. And that's what I found for me and for others, a science-backed approach really does, is it forces you to focus on the buyer. And that infiltrates every area of selling. I know something you're big on as well is really focusing on the buyer. And the science does that because it's not how do I want to sell or what would I want if I were in the buyer's position. It's what's going on inside that buyer's mind. How do I meet his or her needs? How do I help that organization achieve its goals? And that relentless focus on the buyer, I think, is mission critical to success in sales, because selling, as you know, is harder, I think, than ever before because of so many other factors that are going on in our world. And if we don't have that relentless focus on providing value to our buyers at every interaction, you know, it's challenging to be successful. So I think this is where we're at. I think no longer can we get by with just being product or service experts. We now have to become experts on our buyers. We have to really have this focused understanding on them. And that really sets us up for success in every part of the sales process.
I agree. So the book, again, for everyone, is Science of Selling, Proven Strategies to Make Your Pitch, Influence Your Decisions, and Close the Deal. And I'll add, start conversations. David, how can we reach you? What's the best way for us to get a hold of you if we want to continue this conversation?
Yeah, you can reach out to us via our website, Huffeld, Huffeld group.com. A lot of great resources on the website as well for you to look at, articles, blogs, white papers, videos, too, to learn more about science-based selling. And then, of course, we're on LinkedIn and Twitter, and that's at David Huffeld as well. And we have a YouTube channel that you can check out, too.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I think everyone really got their money's worth on this podcast, because we really are focusing more on the buyer now. And we should have been all along, but really are now. And I think that if we can apply, especially you guys who are top of funnel, apply some of these strategies that David specifies in his book, tactically to top of funnel, working through our sequences and cadences and voicemails and pre-sales conversations, we're going to be a lot more effective and reduce that, you know, lag in the pipeline that we experience because we can't get people to come to the table to actually start conversations with us. So, David, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to share this 10 years of research with us, or longer, but 10 years of you putting together.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mary Lou. It's been a pleasure.